Are you serious about writing a nonfiction book this year? Author Accelerator is offering a nonfiction book incubator starting February 28, 2022. There are only a few seats in this intensive program because you will get one-to-one coaching on every single step of the process, and you will have the chance to pitch your proposal to a pool of agents and publishers at the end. A fabulous opportunity. So, apply for the program at bookcoaches.com/non-fiction-incubator and write that down or check the show notes because this is all kind of under the radar. It's a really small program and you're not going to be able to Google it. Every applicant gets a strategic session with Jenny Nash to kickstart your work. We think Jenny and her book coaches are terrific. So apply for the program and tell her we sent you.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is #AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, which is especially apropos this week, as you'll find out in a moment. In any case, this is the podcast about... I forget what we're about.
We are about getting things done.
I've got that. But yeah. Short things, long things, pitches, proposals, fiction, nonfiction. That's the line I was reaching for. Yes, this is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation. And you can find my work at The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Atlantic.
And I am KJ Delantonia, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, the new novel In Her Boots, which is coming out this summer. This is my first time recording in 2022, so my first time getting to put it that way. And I'm also the former editor and leader writer of the Motherload blog at the New York Times. And we have with us a guest today, and I'm going to do the long intro here. She's smiling and nodding at me. She doesn't get to talk yet. So my question is, how has it taken us this long to bring you all the amazing Sue Shapiro?
I have no idea how it's taken us this long.
Am I right? Sue teaches what is unquestionably the class on publishing personal essays. Her motto is instant gratification takes too long, and I love that. And her student success record is astounding. I have edited many of them. She's the author and co-author or editor of 16 books, if I'm getting this right, in genres ranging from memoir to middle grade and including self-help and fiction. She's a poet, an essayist, and a teacher of such generosity and enthusiasm that I could probably just stop talking right now and let her go, and you'd still end this podcast going, man, I learned so much, that was great! Her latest book is The Book Bible, Sell Your Manuscript, No Matter What Genre, Without Going Broke or Insane, certainly a goal to aspire to, and there is no one more qualified to write that. So, Sue, welcome, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, but I should say that with the bio that you have to say failed poet, and you have to say 16 books my family hates. That's my bio.
That's a good one. That's, you know, some people say you don't write anything true until your parents are dead. I personally deeply hope that's not true, and I know Jess has too, and you just are thwarting it.
And one of the rules in class is the first piece you write that your family hates means that you found your voice.
There you go.
I also like KJ's old rule, which was the very person you want not to read this essay is going to be the person who's going to read this essay. Yeah.
Yeah. They will be the first person to read it and contact you. That was in my editorial, standard note that I sent out when I was doing it.
Joan Rivers' line that if you go out without makeup, you'll bump into the person who took your virginity.
Excellent.
Exactly like that.
Exactly.
So... So 16 books your family hates, and that, is there such a thing as a failed poet?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. Sue says yes.
But what was great was that I had a mentor who told me, honestly, that I had too many words, not enough music in my poetry, but there was more poetry in my prose. So that actually turned me around in a good direction.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
There's quite a bit more money in writing essays and memoirs and creative nonfiction books than there is in poetry. So in a weird way, I still love poetry and try to write it and, have helped other people, but it's kind of cool to be free of banging my head against the wall, trying to get editors to respond. Because even when they said, even when they say yes to poetry, and I have a whole chapter about it in Book Bible, if they say yes, they might say, you know, we love this. This is amazing. It's going to come out in 2 years and we're going to pay you in copies.
Yeah.
We should acknowledge, I suppose, that apparently Sue's next door neighbor is a poet, because all of the banging, that's definitely your neighbor just banging their head against their wall, trying to get those lovely lines of poetry down.
Right.
I know a number of people who started MFA programs in poetry and ended up in either fiction or nonfiction. And I don't know any the other way around, although that could be that I don't know that many poets.
No, and actually I have a whole section in Book Bible, which is called genre fluidity. And the whole idea is how sometimes you start a book in one genre, but based on your goal and maybe rejection or need to pay rent, there's ways that you can get mentors or teachers to help you figure out another genre where you'll have more luck. In fact, by the way, if you don't mind, I'll mention you were amazing with Amy Klein, who did all those fantastic mother loads. You really launched her. And she tried to write a memoir about her infertility journey and didn't have luck. And then she wound up, when she made it more of a self-help, helping other women, she had a huge book deal from Random House called The Trying Game.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a really good book, too. I mean, it turned out well. And I've read it. She got the memoir pieces absolutely in there, and it wouldn't be good without it. But it also, it does something that no other book out there does, which is, you know, to give an overview, because she went through so many different ways of trying to get pregnant.
Right. And by the way, she did a lot of things right. I actually mentioned the book in Book Bible because, number one, I mean, it was amazing. The fact that you gave her a platform at the New York Times was huge. And that was the only reason the book happened. So that's one of the things that I say, if you want to, a lot of people say, I want to launch a book and they've never published anything. So one of the things I say is, you know, it's a lot easier to publish 3 pages than it is 300 pages. So why don't you try to launch this with a piece? And quite often the first piece gets a literary agent or editors interested. So Amy did that great. And then also I love the idea of getting feedback, listening to feedback, and being flexible in terms of the externals. Because, you know, truthfully, another problem I see with writers, you do get writers that say, you know, I'm not changing a comma, or I have to be true to my vision. And that's great if you're on a trust fund, you know, or you don't care, you're living in someone's basement in Utah. But for people that want to, you know, that need to make a living sooner, sometimes listening to, being open to hearing feedback, and being able to take it in and to reinvent is a huge part of the, you know, I think that's a huge part of the trick of getting a book deal, especially now, because it's a complicated market.
And that doesn't mean that your first response to an editor can't be, how dare she? But then, unfortunately, as I have found out with my editor in particular, she usually ends up being right. And I usually
Sure that's an internal response.
Exactly.
Not an external.
I actually say in Book Bible that if you feel an editor butchers your work, to write them a letter and say, you butchered it, it should have been this, it should have been that. And then read it to your therapist, tear it up, and email them and say, thank you so much for taking my work. You're amazing and brilliant. Can't wait to write for you again. So that's one of the rules.
It's the only one you sent. All right. Well, before we are clearly
ahead of ourselves.
Could just get carried away and start talking. So, tell us a little bit more about the book Bible and what it is and who it's for. I have read it. I have enjoyed it. I got
a lot
out of it. But
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, so what wound up happening with me is I have an undergraduate degree from University of Michigan and a graduate degree in writing from NYU. And after thousands of dollars and 2 degrees and many years, I didn't even know how to write a cover letter to send out any of the work I'd spent years writing, which was a bummer because my parents were like, okay, move back to Michigan. We're not giving you any more money. So it really took me a long time to figure out, what do editors want and how do I find the editor? And is it fiction? Is it nonfiction? And what should I send? And it just took me years and years, so that by the time I was teaching at the New School in NYU, I didn't want to teach the Fiction 101, Poetry 101, Journalism 101, because much as I love taking classes, it just took me years to figure out. So I invented what I call the instant gratification takes too long method. And luckily it was the New School. So, you know, so I said, can I do this weird method? And they're like, sure, we're the New School. We don't care, you know, just show up. So I was like, cool. So they gave me the room to launch my new method. And actually part of it was they were very generous in giving me stipends to pay fantastic editors to come speak. And I remember we actually had you at a panel at the New School, which was so cool. And that led to tons of people writing pieces. So my first book, the first writing guide was the Byline Bible, Get Published in 5 Weeks. And so that was teaching people how to publish short pieces, especially people of all, I have had students of all ages and all backgrounds. And it just sort of was like the accumulation of what I'd learned in 20 years, to help people. So then my favorite section, I think, in Byline Bible was there was a section of 27 short pieces that led to books, both fiction and nonfiction, literary agents and book deals. So I got millions of emails after the book came where people wanted to know more about that. Mm-hmm. So when I mentioned to my editor, the book Byline Bible did well. So they said, you know, do you have any ideas for a sequel? And I said, I actually do. I actually do have an idea. The book Bible, How to Sell Your Manuscript, No Matter What Genre, Without Going Broke or Insane, where I could have the part about how the best way to launch a book is with a short piece that you publish in a splashy place. But also this funny thing happened to me, which was truthfully, to be honest, and I like to be honest about writing, every time I would, like, I love memoirs, and then, you know, I would get these memoir deals and then they would sell 10 copies. And then that didn't work. So I reinvented myself as a novelist and those sold 8 copies. And then, you know, so if you're not a bestseller, it's hard to get another book. So I kind of, one of the tricks, which I talk about a little bit, is if you switch genres, then you kind of get to start over so they don't have these horrible numbers in book scan. So I just kept jumping around, including everything from, fiction, nonfiction, self-help books, co-authored books, middle grade, self-help. So I just switched around a lot. And I was a little bit embarrassed about it because I felt like, does that make me like a literary dilettante? You know, instead of one of those people that, you know, a novelist or a memoirist, I just keep jumping around. And thank God for a great therapist. But one of the things that was good about it, all that failure and rejection and frustration and not selling books and all that, what was great about it was I'm actually the perfect person to help students figure out which genre to write in, because I've had to reinvent myself so many times to sell books that normally didn't sell. So what I decided was, why don't I take all the frustrations and failure and make it into something that could help people? You know, that's the great thing about teaching, is that I can sort of use all my mistakes to make sure that my students don't make the same mistakes. So that's sort of how, that was the genesis of Book Bible. So I kind of admit, at the beginning about how I sort of danced around different genres, but weirdly it gave me this great overview. So I think of my books, I've been in 8 different genres, which is very rare. Even people that do fiction and nonfiction don't tend to try as many different kinds of books. And also I've literally been through, this is a memoir and I love this, and editors and agents. I remember I did a book, Only as Good as Your Word, writing lessons for my favorite literary gurus. And it started out a memoir and nobody would buy it. And they would say, this is your best writing, but we're not interested. And I would say, why? And they would say, because it's 8 profiles of old people and 6 of them are dead and nobody's going to buy this. And so, But then I kept asking questions, and then somebody said to me, but you know what? I love the advice that you're giving writers here. So if you're willing to change it to like a self-help writing book, then we'll do it. So I've been through that so many times myself that I could do that for other people. And Amy and I actually talked a lot about it. It's kind of a thing, you know, that if a book doesn't sell in one genre, you don't necessarily give up, but you might get smart feedback from mentors or teachers or ghost editors or agents and consider relaunching it.
That's a piece of advice that we give a lot when you're trying to think about a topic that you want to spend, you know, X years of your life on, is to go through and think about all the different ways that you could approach it. You know, it can be a literary memoir. It can be a more tell-all-y memoir. It can be advice on how to begin doing it yourself. It can be lessons learned from. There's sort of a whole different, there's a lot of ways to approach just about anything. So having that list to start with is really helpful. And it's one of the reasons, too, I feel like somebody might look at the book Bible and go, well, this is like a little information about a lot of different things. I need a lot of information about just one thing, but maybe not, you know? You might be surprised to discover that what you thought was going to be a book in one place would fit better in another place.
So one of the things that happened, so I've been teaching these 5-week, publishing short essay classes and also these 5-week book classes, Sell Your First Book, where I bring in great editors and agents, which is one of the upsides of the pandemic was, you know, being able to get great editors and agents from all over to come. But so what happens is if somebody shows me their work or, you know, tells me their idea, I will say that people have been a little bit offended if I'll say, you know, I don't think that's going to fly as a memoir these days, but would you consider self-help? Or, for example, somebody will have a book that where most of the action is set when they're 16 years old. And I'll say, well, that would make a great YA. You know, and people get offended. So what's sort of cool about having the book Bible is I feel like people could read the book Bible first and understand where I'm coming from, because I'm not coming from a position of, I don't think that you could get your dream. I'm coming from a position of, I don't want you to spend 5 years trying to sell a memoir about the fact that you were in juvie for 3 months when you were 16 years old. And that's not really gonna, maybe that's not dramatic enough. And I don't want you to go through the frustration, because I've definitely tried. I tried to sell. I mean, I had one book that took 13 years from start to publication. So instead of a book launch, it got a book mitzvah. And my recent memoir, The Forgiveness Store, took 10 years. So, and if I would have understood some of the things that I now understand, I don't think it would have taken so long. But anyway, so it's sort of cool to sort of lay out the whole theory. And also, you know, I say to people very clearly, what is your goal? So if your goal in life is to sell a novel, and that's, you know, an adult novel, and that's all you've thought about since you've been 13 years old, and that's your MFA, then there's a lot of options. And for example, maybe a small press, maybe you don't mind $1,000 from $2 radio because you get your dream. But there's a lot of other people who take my classes and who email me and they say, I can't pay my rent. You know, I want to leave my job. I have this soul crushing job. And all I want to do is to sell this book. And some people actually feel like getting their message out is more important. For example, Amy Klein, as much as her first person was wonderful, I think she felt that with Crying Game that, I'm sorry, with the Trying Game, that the more people she could help, you know, the more women who were going through infertility and not really understanding the overview, the happier she would be. So part of her goal was to help other women not have to go through what she did with 5 miscarriages. So, so sometimes if you really think about your goal isn't really about the genre. Your goal is about, you know, the mission that your book has or launching a career or being able to make a living.
Yeah, I think it's an illusion that many people who want to be writers have, that you have to be an artist with a capital A. That the real writer is someone who has a message that they desperately want to share, or a story that they must tell, or a literary voice that has to get out. I'm not myself even immune to this illusion that like everybody else feels that way. But the truth is that most, if not all, I don't know, all is a stretch, but if you just look at the three of us, we've all written in multiple genres. We work in multiple genres. And that is because all three of us wanted to be writers. None of us wanted, you know, it wasn't a specific desire. And I think that that is way more common than we realize when we're sort of sitting around as a teenager thinking, well, no, I can't just want to be a writer. I have to specifically want to be, John Updike or something.
Right, and by the way, one of the things I do with the book Bible is, like I said, I'm not going to crush anybody's dream in any way. It's the opposite, but I'm as honest as I can be. So for example, you know, and I do have a lot of poetry students from the MFA programs, and I just start off by saying, okay, you're not going to make any money in poetry. Like maybe there's 3 Instagram poets in the world and Rod McEwen who paid their bills with poetry. But so I'm very, very honest, and the same thing with literary fiction. But what happens, which I think is great, is once you understand your goal, you could then, make some changes. For example, if your goal is to sell a literary novel or to sell poetry or short story collection, that's great. But then keep your day job, Yep. Or find another way.
Or find a teaching job and get you an MFA and get yourself on that train, because that can be done.
You know, or a rich spouse, or, you know,
yeah,
a trust fund or something like that. But just, you know, so what I wanted to lay out in the book Bible was, you know, you can absolutely, I mean, in my experience teaching 25 years, and I have tons of students that have done beautiful books that are award-winning and bestsellers, and a few got $500,000 advances, you know, so I think it is doable. But I think if you have the whole picture in front of you, I think that gives you a better path, better direction. And unfortunately, I didn't really have that when I moved to New York. I loved my MFA program. I loved studying with great poets, but there really wasn't anybody talking about the business side of it. And I just kind of, I mean, I'm lucky because I had a wonderful career, you know, but I moved to New York when I was 20 to be a writer, and at 43, Random House published my first hardcover. So there's 20, you know, after 23 years, that was an overnight success. And that didn't last that long because they weren't bestsellers. But so in a weird way, you know, it's good that I've had all these obstacles and struggles, especially as a teacher, because then I can give you sort of I can give students a little bit more of an overview.
I would say that the book Bible, having read through the whole thing, it's the overview that they should give you in an MFA course or any form of, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of writers that don't end up in MFA courses, but any form of writing class, this is the overview you should get at the beginning. This is the sort of, here is the industry as a whole. And even if you have no desire to ever publish a cookbook, it is very useful to understand how cookbooks are pitched and published. Even if you're never going to publish a graphic novel or a children's picture book, it is really important as part of this industry to understand, you know, what's going on, in the same way that, I don't know, if you're a lawyer, you don't go, okay, well, what I would like to specialize in is writing wills for sports figures. So I'm heading straight into the court class about writing wills for sports people, and I'm going to skip contracts and, you know, corporate law and all of that stuff. Let me just say, you should skip law school entirely and do something else, but that's another podcast.
Yeah, I did a panel last night, an online panel with Shakespeare and Company, and one of the editors, who I love from HarperCollins, Rakesh Satyal, he is an editor at HarperCollins and was at Simon & Schuster, but he's also published two novels. And when I asked him for advice, because I interviewed him for the book Bible, because he's published fiction and nonfiction, and then he's written his own work. So he's kind of a perfect person, and he won a Lambda Award for his debut. But so one of the things he suggests is, not only should writers learn about business, but he actually says, if you can afford it, if you're just starting out, get a job in publishing, because then you see how the sausages are made. And one of my first jobs out of school was an editorial assistant at the New Yorker for 4 years. And it definitely taught me a lot. So that's interesting advice too. You know, if you want to be a writer and you're 18 years old, going to college, or 22 and thinking about graduate school, that's a great way to learn about, the externals of the business. And as you said, it's so interesting that if you're going into law, medicine, or business, there's a very specific path. You get this degree, and then we help you with internships and residencies, and this is the job, and this is how much you get paid for these jobs. And everybody knows it. You can just Google it. And when it comes to being a writer, there's nothing like that. There's no one path. There's a million paths, and most people don't make it at all. So, So I think it's, you know, I think learning a little bit about the business side is a smart thing to do. And I tried to make both Byline Bible and Book Bible fun, you know, because I think there's sort of a lot of self-help type or, you know, writing guides out there that are either boring or they tend to be, you know, here's how to write a novel based on, you know, the way that I wrote my novels, or here's how to write a memoir. But so I definitely wanted a bigger overview, because the truth is, and I have tons of MFA students who have book deals, but the amount that are publishing poetry or novels is much smaller than people that figure out how to do YA and MG and self-help and narrative nonfiction and biographies. So just the mere, you know, just having the knowledge that there's a lot of choices out there, I think can be empowering.
It was a huge surprise to me to learn that nonfiction sells in much larger numbers than fiction, because as a reader, especially like as a young person coming out of school and being in my early 20s, I don't think I'd read any nonfiction. So or if I had, it had been, you know, assigned in school or was the one book that everybody read that year or something like that. I was well into my 40s before somebody told me that, and I still had to go look it up. I was like, no, you got that backwards, right?
And by the way, that's, you know, I say this all the time. It's a billion times easier to publish a nonfiction book than it is poetry, short stories, or a novel. And people ask why. And the reason is, if you have a great story, if you have a juicy story, you could sell a nonfiction book. And if you have trouble writing it yourself, you could, I mean, I've co-authored books. You can have, if an editor wants your story, if it's dramatic or sensationalistic or whatever it is, if it's a wild enough story, you can, an editor will help you write it. They'll give you a ghostwriter. They'll give you a ghost editor. Whereas with literary work, which is really short stories, poetry, and fiction, it's all about the words and the language. And so you really can't.
You have to have both.
You have to have both. You could probably, you know, if your language is beautiful, the chances that you would be able to publish a book are good, even if you don't have a great story. Like, you know, I was mentioning the other day that Annie Dillard, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, there's not really much of a plot in that. It's the language is just so beautiful and gorgeous, and it's pure poetry. And there's a lot of poetry that doesn't really have a strong storyline. On the other hand, again, I've had people with no writing ability whatsoever, but the story that they're telling is amazing. And you can get a book deal. And by the way, with self-help, the most important thing in self-help is what's your platform. So
right.
If you're a CEO who went from rags to riches, you could absolutely get a book deal. And again, you could just have somebody help you put it together. So I didn't understand that myself. And it's interesting because I had started with poetry and then I was a failed poet and then a failed novelist. And then I sold 5 nonfiction books in a row and I was 43 when it started. And I wish somebody would have explained it to me. I wish somebody in my MFA program would have told me that if you take the obsessive subjects you're writing poetry about, which in my case was my fucked up relationships with men and then my fucked up relationships with addictions, because I was like smoking and drinking and doing drugs. So that started out in bad poetry and then it went to essays. Same topic. And then those were the subject of my first books. My first memoir was 5 Men Who Broke My Heart. My second memoir was Lighting Up, How I Stopped Smoking, Drinking, and Everything Else I Loved in Life Except Sex. But nobody explained to me, you know, early on, why don't you consider prose? You know, or you could take the same topics and actually, you know, on the upside, get a much bigger audience, get a bigger.
Well, nobody talks about how it can be a form of apprenticeship too. You know, writing anything is good practice for writing everything.
Right. And actually, if you have any talent at all, I found in writing fiction, poetry, short stories, theater, if you bring that to nonfiction or journalism, you're already way ahead because truthfully, there's a lot of nonfiction writers and journalists who are kind of hacks just in terms of what they think about is the story. What's my lead? What's my story? What's the news angle? And they really haven't been schooled in, and I taught in NYU Journalism School for 10 years. They really haven't been schooled in anything literary. And so if you bring anything to journalism or nonfiction or self-help or YA or MG, any kind of more creative talent, then that just puts you ahead of the, you know, ahead of the pack. So that's, you know, so I wish that MFA programs would, you know, let people know, you know, that you can expand. I mean, what's great now at the new school is they have a whole new division of their MFA program. It's fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and they recently started children's lit. And I think that's brilliant. And I have quite a few students. I think I wrote a list of about 25 students who are rocking, former students who are rocking the kid world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and a lot of people don't understand that a picture book, an MG, or a middle grade or a young adult book, much, much easier to sell than an adult book a lot of the time. And if you're younger, if you're 20 or 23 or 24, even better because you're probably more in touch with what happened to you when you were 12 or 16 than someone who's 49. So you actually, you know, someone who's 49 would probably have more experience, might have more experience in terms of publishing a memoir or a novel. They might have something on you. But when it comes to kids' books, I mean, I have a 22-year-old student who just graduated who just pitched a picture book and got a great agent, my agent, Samantha Wexstein, and has already a big editor interested. And it was, he just took, he published some short pieces, but he took the book class. And I think he just sort of all of a sudden he understood what's doable at 22.
Right. And there's, I mean, there is a process to getting published. And that is your generous gift, is that you are willing to illuminate that for everyone. And I think that so many people just kind of come at it blind. That it's like, I wrote something, I don't know what to do with it next. I told a story, but I don't know where. Nobody teaches you these things outside of MFA programs, and they don't teach them often inside of MFA programs.
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm happy I wrote the book, because I cannot tell you how many, I always answer every email that when people have questions. So profsue123@gmail.com, email me at night. I promise I'll get back to you. But what happens is I get millions of emails that say, I just finished my novel. It's 774 pages. Want to read it? I've attached it. So then I'll ask a few questions, which is, do you have an English degree? Who did you study with? Do you have an MFA? And the person will be like, no, I studied engineering, but I know this is great. So what's really cool is that now I could say, go read my book Bible, and then come back and tell me, did you answer these 7 questions? And then someone will come back and say, oh, I didn't know what a ghost editor was. Or you think I should try a writing group first? Or what do you mean publish 3 pages? How do you do that? And I'm like, oh, go buy the other book. So in a weird way, I'm happy to do it because it helps me help people. And if they say they can't afford it, which happens a lot of the time, I actually even have the computer versions on, I could even send them the e-version. So that way I feel like I could be helpful and give direction without having to read the whole book and critique it, which of course is gets difficult when I have 100 students term on my own. Yeah, so that's another benefit. So this way I could just, I could share information that I've learned the hard way in a very easy way. In fact, I think Book Bible is only like $15. So I feel sort of happy when people email me and say, try this. This might give you some direction.
One of the things that I loved about Book Bible, and one of this is one of those things it's really, really helpful. The book is really, really helpful, but it also fills a space in my heart for publishing porn, which is just those books where you get really concrete examples of X did this and it worked and here's how it went and here's an insight into the process and here's someone who's willing to tell me from a non-BS perspective how you get from point A to point B and give me examples. And as before I published anything, I scooped all that stuff up and just, it's the reason that I love, Betsy Lerner's book. It's the reason that I love sort of those behind the scenes here's how I became a writer. And one of the reasons that after I sold The Gift of Failure, I wrote a 3-part blog post called When Opportunity Knocks. And it was like part 1, part 2, part 3. And I'm like, and here's my contribution to the publishing porn genre, because you have to read that stuff in order to just stay hopeful and to stay on the right path and to stay motivated. And I love that stuff. So I read it both from your book, from the perspective of, this is really helpful stuff. And I loved, the story about how, maybe you should Google and Amazon and go to libraries and look up the title of a book before you propose it to to someone confidently and say, look, I'm filling a niche. And they say, you mean this niche right here with this book that already exists. So really practical stuff, but also just delicious and really inspiring.
And I went to my agent and I was like, I have this great idea for a book, How to Stay Single Forever. And she turned around and pulled out the book.
Oh, such a great story. I love that.
When I interviewed about 100 people for Book Bible, including, interestingly, a lot of my students, because they're doing better than I am in the book world. So and what's really cool is they'll always, a former student will always email you back. So that was great. But there's one story that I told that probably changed my whole career, which is, because you need sort of mentors or older people or luminaries in the field. So I had been trying to sell a book for 7 years and banging my head against the wall and complaining to my shrink. And I think my shrink said to me, I think I was complaining that I knew someone who had just sold a big nonfiction book. And then I knew someone who had just sold a novel. And he said, well, they're friends of yours, so take them out to lunch or dinner, pick their brain, ask them if they have any advice. So I said, okay. So I did that. So I went out with my friend Larry for lunch, And I said, you know, I told him I had this book I've been trying to sell for 7 years. I said, do you have any advice you could give me? You know, because he had just sold this big nonfiction book. And he said, okay, don't tell anyone. But after I finished my proposal, I hired this woman named Sally, who's a former editor at Doubleday, and she's a ghost editor. And she went through it and we went through a couple drafts, and that's how I sold it. So here's her number, but don't tell anyone else. I said, okay. So then I went out to dinner with Yona, who had just sold a big novel. And I told her, you know, told her that I've had trouble. And she said, okay, I'm going to tell you this just between us. There's this ghost editor named Sally who works at Doubleday, who I paid, and she went through my novel and she's really great. So I got in touch with Sally and she was a couple $1,000s. So I went back to my shrink and I'm like, see, I can't afford this. This is ridiculous. This is why it'll never happen. And he's like, how stupid are you? You know, you just, it was like that joke with God, you know, giving you like, you know, 20 ways.
I sent a helicopter. I sent a canoe. I sent, you know, yeah.
It was like two people who you trust just told you they sold big book deals, fiction and nonfiction, using this editor. Teach another class, like put it on your credit card. And I did, I taught two other classes so that I could afford her. And I think if I remember correctly, this is a while ago, but I think it, my book, my first book was 220 pages. And I think it was about $2,500, which at the time seemed ridiculous to spend, but I thought, you know, I'm going to bet on myself. And I worked, did other jobs to do it. And that was the first book that sold, 5 Men Who Broke My Heart, which was a $50,000 advance from Random House. And it led to 7 foreign editions and a TV film deal and a whole bunch of other books. And she then helped me sell the first novel that I'd been working on for 13 years. And so after that, I swear by ghost editors, because you can actually pay somebody who has been inside a publishing house. In fact, the only ones that I usually work with are former editors or former agents, or sometimes even people that are still there, because editors and agents don't necessarily make that much money. So sometimes you can pay them to ghost edit. And my idea is critique it, kill it. What's wrong with this? What am I doing wrong? And yeah, and it's something nobody wants to talk about, but everybody in the business knows about.
Yeah, this is something that we talk about this a lot. And I love that you just said that both of these people said, well, don't tell anyone, but I have worked with multiple book coaches. I talk about Jenny Nash all the time. Suzanne Dunlop helped me with the novel that's coming out now. Granted, my nonfiction, I didn't need a ghost editor for, but I was also deep in the industry in that position with, at the time, a platform. And hey, it might have benefited from
more editing.
Well,
and we do have to add that our agent is a former assistant to an editor and has been in the book world. And so she is our first, for nonfiction for KJ and for me, she is my first and most, I think, most important editor, because she's the one who, you know, I do have to brace myself when I open those first emails after I've sent her something for the first time, because she's going to rip it apart. And that is great. And it really, you know, I'm a grown up now. And I think, well, and I think that that's also part of the evolution, is that your book does a great job of explaining this, is that you're going to need to be open to feedback. And that's been
and
a really big part of the process.
And pay for it. That's what people do. Very few. There are naturals out there, but most of us aren't them. And you don't, like, there's no pride in being in, there's nothing to be gained by, you know, standing on your high horse and holding on to your pride and not reaching out for help, if reaching out for help could get you published.
I do warn people in advance, though, that there are people that take advantage of writers out there. So I feel like you don't just want to go on the internet and find somebody. What you want to do is you want to get a recommendation. And if anybody emails me, I work with 10 different ghost editors who are great. In fact, hilariously, I kept trying to sell this co-authored middle grade book and it wasn't happening. And I have a former student, Abby Scher, who's extremely poetic in her MG and YA. So I wound up hiring her to help me with the sample pages. But anyway, I have a very wide range in terms of all the different genres that people have expertise in. But I do think you have to be careful. So you want to get a recommendation. You want to look at somebody's bio and make sure that they were either a book editor or a literary agent. Make sure that they've done your genre, which is huge. You know, because at one point I had somebody who was a brilliant poet looking at my commercial memoir. They were giving me bad advice, you know, mm-hmm. because they were saying, talk about death. And it's like, no, it was, you know, sex, you know. But so, yeah, so I think you have to be careful in who you hire. And again, if anybody emails me, I definitely will recommend people that only people that I've worked with who are editors and agents. And the other thing I say to people, though, is you know, there's no guarantee. So you have to be careful. You know, you sort of have to bet on yourself if you have another way. Like for me, what's really great is that I will teach another class, or I'll do editing myself in order to afford, you know, to pay for a ghost editor, and they can be expensive, but you know, there's no guarantees. And when I teach my instant gratification takes too long classes, I say a lot of my students have been published. Here are their pieces. I can't promise you. In fact, editors can't even promise you, because sometimes, I mean, recently somebody who worked at the New York Times said yes to a lot of pieces, and then a new editor came in and they had to cancel them. Mm-hmm. So I always say until you see your byline spelled right and the check clears and it's out there, there aren't guarantees, but you can make it much more likely that good things will happen. There's that great line about the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take a quick pause and then let's talk about what we've been reading. Okay, so we always like for our guests to go first. Give us something you have read and loved lately.
Okay, I have this thing where I don't like it when people, when authors plug famous people, because I feel like, and they always, in fact, my students are constantly, I love Joan Didion's new book. Well, thanks for sharing that on social media. She doesn't really need your help. She never needed your help. So I only plug books by former students because I feel like they're starting out.
We'll take that.
Yeah. So a debut book that I loved is my former student, Tiffany Drayton, has a book, a memoir coming out in February that's called Black American Refugee. And it was based on a New York Times piece that she did. And it's coming out from Viking. And it's, I don't know, I just loved it. It's about how her mom is from Trinidad, and as much as they tried to make a living and to, you know, to have a good life in America, the American dream kind of eluded them in all the ways it did. And I just think it's brave. And also it's this wonderful happy ending because her dream was always to be a writer. And then finally, by writing about this important topic, which is racism and gentrification and kind of subversive ways that people of color are left out of the American dream, she found the American dream. So it's really exciting. In fact, hilariously, I was trying to figure out who could I get to blurb the book Bible, because most of the editors and agents I tried didn't want to do it because they felt like they didn't want to blurb a book from a different publisher, from a different agent. It was kind of complicated. And then my editor said, why don't you go for students you've helped? So hilariously, I went to Tiffany for a blurb. So that was cool. But anyway, so I love Black American Refugee, and we're going to do an event together right around both of our birthdays on January 22nd. We're going to do an online event at the Strand, which will be very cool.
Very cool. Well, I will follow in your footsteps then and only recommend a debut novelist. And this is also something that's coming out soon. I don't think that I've talked about it, although I did read it and I wrote a blurb for it. I loved it very much. I try to be really judicious with my fictional blurbing, and it's kind of another story. But in any case, I didn't know this person, and that someone sent me the book, and I thought, this sounds great. I won't read anything that doesn't sound like something I would read. It's called The Frederick Sisters Are Living the Dream. It's by Janine Zusi. It is her first book, although she is a playwright, so it's sort of not her first adventure in storytelling. I have never read anything like this as a novel. It is the story of a midlife woman whose sister is mentally differently abled and has been in a home supported by her parents for their entire lives. The parents are gone. Now it is time for the sister, one of the three sisters, to take on her sister. And you know, the truth is that the sister doesn't want to be moved and doesn't necessarily want help. There's a lot of other story around it, teenagers, husbands, all kinds of stuff, but that sister challenge is at the core of it, and I loved it so much. It's really good.
My recommendation today is also, it happens to be, I believe, a first-time debut novelist, and unfortunately, Maureen Corrigan got there first. Yesterday, I was riding along in my car, and Maureen Corrigan was going off waxing rhapsodic about Mark Prinz's new book, The Latinist, and I had already picked The Latinist up in paper At the Vermont Bookshop a while ago, and hadn't had a chance to read it. And then Maureen Corrigan just went on and on and on about it. So I have been listening to it today, actually, and it's fantastic. It's a little bit, you know, Donna Tartt, The Secret History. There's a whole, it's set at Oxford. I was a former Latin teacher, and this book is about someone who's deep into the classics. And there's a mystery happening and a weird, it's not what I expected it to be, which is just really fun. It's a bit of a thriller. It's a bit of a mystery, but also the story of what it takes to try to succeed in that, in the field of classics, in a place where, you know, like Oxford. And I met my husband at Oxford University, so there's also a whole bunch of just sort of reminiscing about places. But Mark Prins, spelled P-R-I-N-S, highly recommend. And it's just a delightful read.
Cool, and thank you for spelling that, because it would have been wrong in the show notes.
Yep.
Except that our brilliant assistant, Natasha, would have fixed it for me. All right, this was fantastic, everyone. Sue, I know that people can find you on your website, which is sueshapiro.net. Uh-oh, is it? I'm going to get it right. It's sueshapiro.net. I thought so. Where else can people find you?
They can absolutely email me, profsue123@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram at profsue123, and I'm on Twitter. All my students help me, by the way, with my social media. And I'm on Twitter at Susan Shapiro Net, and I'm LinkedIn. I even like, so I love social media. I love it when people follow me. And if anybody emails, because I have to do so many cold emails myself constantly from editors and agents and, you know, for publicity and stuff, I have a rule for karma, which is I have to answer every email that people send me. So, so I promise if people email me, night is better. I always get these Monday morning, 8 o'clock, 75 line emails. So I always like write right back and say, pick one question and email me tonight. And I promise I'll get back to you.
Even publicists who are emailing you about something that has nothing to do with anything you've ever done or will do.
You know, I do that because I'll tell you why, because every once in a while I drive a publicist crazy because, for example, my new school classes, like this is going to happen. Like Tiffany, I'm going to make her speak to my upcoming new school class. So I had to bug the publicist to either get me 20 galleys for all my students or get me an e-galley that everyone could use. So I feel like I do that every term. So I'm constantly bugging publicists to do annoying things like give me a whole box of books. They're like, are you crazy? I'm like, no, I need it. My students publish great pieces. And then I send them the pieces and then we have to work it out. But anyway, so I feel like as a courtesy, I'll even say to a publicist, you know, I'm not reviewing these kinds of books anymore, but I have a former student who is. And then sometimes that'll be a good shidduch, as we call it in Yiddish. So, yeah, so I try to be, you know, and a lot of publicists are 23-year-olds who want to be writers.
Yeah. You are the best literary citizen, or the best email citizen. You are an excellent literary citizen, too, but you're also an excellent literary email citizen. So I love that.
No, and also, truthfully, I think you do get good karma. So just, by the way, a great way to end is I do think that we were just talking with Zibby Owens, who's a former student, about her podcast, which I know you were on, too. You did so great. But so... By helping other people, I think, other authors and plugging their books, I think great karma came back to her. And I found the same thing because I used to review books and, you know, post reviews about other people. And I do think that's a really good way, you know, being a good literary citizen is a great way to start, you know, read books, the kind of books you want to publish yourself, buy them, go to book events. There's a lot of free events you could do. Post on Amazon if you like a book. So I think being a good literary citizen is a smart way to start.
Agreed.
Such great advice. Such fantastic advice.
Thank you.
All right. It sounds like we are done for the day. And thank you so, so much for coming. I cannot recommend your book more highly. It is not only, like I said, really informative, it's also just a really fun read. Susan Shapiro has a fantastically fun voice to read, and we all could do with another really sort of more publishing porn in our lives. So until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save, pause, stop, stall.